Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sapphic Spooky Club, where we explore lesbian themes in film, TV, books, music, and anywhere else sapphics haunt. We are your ghosts. I'm Laurel Hachinova.
And I'm Audrey. And it's October, babies. Ooh. Time for the inspookenings.
Today we're talking about ghosts, specifically lesbian ghosts, and the very rough evolution of lesbian ghosts through cinema. Also, just a note, there will be spoilers, but we will hopefully probably give you a heads up about what film we're spoiling before we do it. If you don't want spoilers for the things that we're talking about today, there are minute notes in the show notes for this episode. So if you want to, for example, skip the Bly Manor stuff and go straight to the other stuff, or skip the Portrait stuff and go straight to Bly Manor, there will be ways to do that. Who hasn't watched Portrait? No, all of you, none of you skip Portrait.
You never know.
I know, it's true. So, Audrey, have you ever seen a ghost?
Have I seen a ghost?
Yeah, have you ever seen a ghost?
I have never seen a ghost, but I had a haunting experience once.
Ooh.
Have I told you this?
I don't think so.
This was like years ago when I was working in reality TV and I was staying at this hotel, which may have been haunted, I don't know. But the short story is I went to bed and then at around 3 a.m. I woke up in like a panic with my heart racing. And it was super eerie. And I was like, it felt like, I don't know if I like believe in ghosts, but I'm like totally open to the idea of
they
them.
Believe in you.
Oh, good. Someone should. And I just had this feeling like something was, I don't know if I had a feeling that something was like present, but like it felt like something was slightly off. I had a hard time going back to bed. And then the next day I was telling someone about the story and like someone overheard, and apparently two other people had this same experience at the exact same time. And there was no earthquake, nothing like that. Like nothing unusual. I didn't hear any like loud noises or anything. I just like shot out of bed with my heart racing. Like I had just, you know, been on a like roller coaster or something like that. I've heard other stories of people like experiencing something similar when they stayed in a place where something really horrible happened, like murder, cannibalism.
Ooh.
So the answer to that is I've never seen a ghost, but maybe I felt one.
Yeah. Wow. Uh-huh. Yeah. Was the hotel like creepy? Like was it old?
Not really. It was like a Sheraton or something. I mean, I think it's like an old building in LA that I think had been like converted to a hotel, to like the Sheraton at some point in its history. I don't know like what the history of the hotel is, but you know, lots of stuff happened in hotels. Like I'm sure murders happen in hotels all the time, but yeah, so it was definitely creepy. The creepiest part was the other people who experienced it, you know, the same thing.
Yeah. Wow, good one.
I'm surprised you've never seen a ghost. You seem like someone who would, you know, be visited would by see them all the time.
I look like a haunted person. Yeah, is that what you're trying
you
to
do
tell me?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to say it like that, but yeah.
Later in high school and early college, when I still lived in Guam, my girlfriend at the time and I would try to and one of our friends, we would try to go to like these places on island that were known, quote unquote, to be haunted. I feel like almost every town has like a jilted bride type ghost story, right? Where it's like someone is left at the altar and she's like tragically killed in some way.
Oh.
And so she haunts this like area looking for her long lost love or something. So there was like an area like that. We never saw her. There was a hospital that was like the old hospital, you know. We would go in there and try to see if there was anything that we could see, and there was nothing. But outside of like actively looking for ghosts in those places with other people, I also try like not to court ghosts. Like I don't like like if it's a weird feeling hotel or something, I try not to look behind me sometimes. Ooh. Or like I don't like spirits come, I'm open to like what's your story, or I don't know, how do people call ghosts? I don't do that.
Seance.
And I don't perform seances everywhere you go. Personal seances. So it's like I also like I did try to see ghosts, and I also actively try never to see ghosts because I feel like I would crap my pants and then also die, right?
Like crap my pants and then die. But
yeah,
I would expect that in the effort to not see the ghost, that's when you would
see
it.
You see the ghost. Yeah,
most of our lives we probably are not like expecting to see a ghost, right? So
I don't know, I feel like my imagination is super active sometimes, and so if I imagine that I can feel something behind me, then I can definitely make myself feel like there's something behind me, and then okay, so this is one of my biggest fears, is that like I drive myself insane, because if I just imagine that there's something that is like constantly after me, like Babadook style or whatever, I can manifest that for myself in my own brain, right? And so even if it doesn't actually exist, I can make it my reality, and then it's my reality, and the end. Yeah.
No. Well, maybe today we will both see a ghost.
Oh. No one on the podcast. No one can see this.
This is not a video podcast.
Yeah.
So while you were talking, I just remembered that I have another kind of ghost story. When I was working at like a document imaging company back when I was like a baby, I was like managing the staff, and one of them went
I'm imagining a literal infant doing all these things, by the way.
I was managing a bunch of babies. You know, child labor laws don't apply in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
But some of my friends went to Ojai, which is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's, I think it's around where Coachella is held. But there's this famous place where you can like jump what's it called, not cliff dive, but like jump from like pretty high up into the water, and people die all the time. Every year they're like, I don't know, hundreds of deaths or something. I'm probably exaggerating, but it's like known as this kind of dangerous area, yet people still dive. And she took a bunch of pictures there and got them developed, and this was, not to date myself, but like this was back when, you know, people were still doing this thing called developing film.
People still do that?
No, they don't. No one knows what that is. No, you're right. It's like become trendy again. Like cassette tapes. I don't think at the time she knew that this was like a place where people died all the time. And she brought her pictures into work to show us, but they were all covered in these like these sort of like white dots. We like looked it up, and it turns out they're called orbs. Like people who like actively look for ghosts identify these like in photos as orbs. There's so these white semi-opaque dots. And there's also these other photos that had like these strands of what looked like hair, like white hair covering the photo, but like white, kind of blurry, you know. And because I worked at a document imaging company, I was like, let's scan these and like zoom in and see if we can see anything. And I'm not fucking like, now I think I'm nuts, but like at the time we saw some crazy shit.
What?
When we zoomed in, there were some like weird things, and maybe yes, like we were probably looking for it because we were probably wanted to scare ourselves.
Yeah.
But like I remember seeing what looked like an image of a young girl with her neck kind of craned over, and like everything was like a little bit blurry, and I'm sure, you know, it's like looking at a cloud, right? You can probably find whatever you want to there, but it was, I don't know. It was creepy. In like the strands, there were like things that looked kind of like eyeballs. I was like, maybe there was some kind of, you know, when these photos got processed, they got mixed with something else. I have no idea. But it was definitely like the most creeped out I'd been looking at photos.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So
I'm not haunted. You're haunted.
I think I am haunted. It's true. Ooh. I'm curious if anyone else listening has some ghost stories.
Yeah, please. Oh my gosh. I love creeping myself out with these.
I love
clearly.
Creeping Laurel out. So let's submit your ghost stories, and we'll share them in our Halloween episode.
Ooh.
Bonus points if they are sapphic ghosts.
That'd be great. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But maybe all ghosts are sapphic.
Oh, great segue. Ooh. Why are we talking about ghosts today? Well, first off, of course, Halloween. But second, I feel like ghosts are kind of the most sapphic of the, let's say, classic Western monsters. So, you know, if you've got like werewolves, vampires, like Frankenstein-y monsters, ghosts kind of feel, by definition, like they're very sapphic. And this is also, of course, if you do not count witches as monsters.
I was going to say, like, what about witches?
Yeah.
I feel like witches
are monsters.
Category.
Witches are, yeah.
I mean, there's much monsters as, like, I would say, vampires and werewolves. I mean, traditionally, in terms of like how they're perceived.
Yeah, perception, yes. But then also, like, I feel like I kind of categorize monsters as being sort of like a supernatural, like, witches could just be a woman with, if you think of just like the woman who lives in the woods who's very good at like herbs and like manifesting spells, is kind of like, there's that witch. But then if you've got like WandaVision type witches,
yeah, that's true.
Those are more monstrous. Oh, but ghosts are super yearny, you know, like, they die and then they just stick around forever and they pine for their former life or their former loves. And yearning, I feel, is a very sort of maybe stereotypically sapphic quality.
So I 100% agree with you. But I also just want to counter that and say that maybe they're like the most heterosexual out of the monsters. Who else sticks around and just like creeps on you and won't leave? Yeah, and is like really bad at expressing their intention besides heterosexual men.
That's very true. That's very true.
But like, I like your version better.
We'll go with the former for now. But yes, keep the latter in mind. But yeah, so why are there so few lesbian ghosts in cinema? I don't know. Are all ghosts actually lesbians? No.
I think they are. I think they are. I mean, I think that we should.
Casper.
We should just go ahead. Lesbian. Casper's a lesbian. Slimer's a lesbian. What's that marshmallow dude in the.
Stave Puff? Yes. That's a ghost.
Aren't they all ghosts? I don't know.
Oh, that's true, because they
lesbian,
get busted,
Butch,
right?
Lesbian.
Yeah. Nice.
Tell me a ghost that isn't a lesbian, and I'll tell you they're a lesbian.
Yeah, Patrick Swayze and Ghost.
Lesbian. Via Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
I mean, Patrick Swayze was like a baby dyke.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wait. So why specifically are we talking about lesbian ghosts? Well, coming off the tails of the last episode where we talked about the survey that Heather and Baby and Emmy are running. You run a survey. And please go fill that out, by the way. Link is still in our bio. And part of their intention was to increase lesbian visibility. And this is because lesbians are often sort of like, even when it came to laws, there were laws against sodomy, for example, which were directed at gay men, because they didn't feel that like women could have sex with each other. So, you know, we weren't really seen as, it was just the sort of like gal pals kind of scenario where it wasn't as threatening. I don't know if I wouldn't say it was threatening.
I think it is threatening. Like, I think anything that goes against the norm and convention is threatening. And I think,
but if it was threatening, like, why weren't there laws against it earlier? You know, like, it, I feel like in that context,
because women are less threatening than men.
Right. Okay.
I think that has more to do with, you know, conventional womanhood and like how women are perceived in society as. So it's like, the woman is not threatening, but the woman who doesn't need men, who is not like maybe going to be a mother in society, that is conceptually threatening, right? Mm-hmm, threatens the fabric of society and like the church. It's not threatening in the same way as men, gay men, mm-hmm. I guess, but there's still like a certain sort of, I don't know, softer threat.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I found, while I was researching for this episode, I found this quote that I liked from Rona J. Bernstein, who says that portraying lesbians as ghosts in Hollywood movies is directly linked to cultural attitudes and anxieties about homosexuality. The lesbian is a paradoxical figure. She is an invisible yet representational threat.
Yeah, that's perfectly sums it up, I think.
Yeah. So hence lesbian ghosts, invisible yet representational threat. And then it was interesting because this is a quote that was from her essay on the film Rebecca, which we'll talk about in a bit. But she says that Rebecca's powers in the film are indeed profound, yet reviewers at the time shied away from enumerating exactly what kind of threat she embodied or disembodied. Disembodied because she's a ghost. So it kind of implies that like, oh, there's just something about, you know, these women that people find menacing, but they can't really put their finger on it. And they can't put their finger on it because, one, it's sexism, and two, she's a ghost.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the whole like idea of reviewers kind of shying away from speaking to exactly what that is, it does sort of perfectly coincide with, you know, we'll talk about this more later, like the Hays Code, right? Because everything is sort of subtextual here. There's no point in the film where you explicitly know that they're lesbians. Although I feel like out of all films with gay themes during this time, you might argue that this is the least subtextual, but we'll get into that a little bit more. But I think it's kind of interesting, and I don't want to like stray too far from the topic of ghosts, but it's like traditionally lesbians are portrayed as like vampires in films. And I think that's like another way, it's like this other side of how lesbians are perceived where they're sort of fetishized and like sexualized by straight men. And I'm sure there's like people who've done actual, you know, research on this. This is just me like sort of speculating. But I think to represent them as vampires, it's like, oh, they can be sexy, but they're still monsters. And at the end of the day, a white man is going to come in and drive a stake through their heart and kill them. Right. Yeah. So there's this certain level of like control that you have. You can still like ogle them on screen, but then also kill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, lesbian ghosts. So I think maybe a good way to sort of frame how we'll talk about a few films is the history of Hollywood. Oh,
We're talking about four films, but we're going to start with the history of cinema.
Okay. Two of the films that I think we should start with are what you mentioned earlier, Rebecca and The Uninvited. And maybe before we really get into the lesbian ghosts in these films, we should give a little bit of context to what it was like in pre-code Hollywood before the Hays Code was actually being enforced, which is when both Rebecca and The Uninvited came out in the 1940s. Also, I should note that I'm not a film historian, so
you... Oh, that should have been in our disclaimer.
Yeah. That should be in all our disclaimers, yeah. That we're just kind of like, what are we? What do you call like an armchair critic, like a in this context? Like we're armchair lesbians.
Oh, I think critic is fine because anyone can be a critic and everyone kind of is a critic.
True, yeah. I'm an armchair lesbian. That doesn't make sense.
Wow, you're not actually an expert lesbian?
No, I'm not. I'm definitely not an expert. No, I am. I think in our first episode this season, I was like, we're both lesbian experts. Remember? Anyway, so when I say pre-code Hollywood, I am referring to the time before the Hays Code gets established, which is otherwise known as like the motion picture
production code. Yeah.
So this is like roughly between the widespread adoption of sound in movies and then the enforcement of the MPPC censorship guidelines. So we're talking about around 1929 to 1934. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that queer people have rarely been represented fairly, if at all, throughout the history of Hollywood. But at least in pre-code Hollywood, you get to see a movie where Marlene Dietrich dresses in drag and kisses a woman, like in the film Morocco, right? Mm-hmm. So that's happening. And then late 1920s, early 1930s, that's when this code gets established. And it's essentially, very briefly, a response to a series of scandals that happened in Hollywood in the 20s. And I think it's actually written by the Catholic Church.
Yes. Yeah.
As a way to self-censor films, essentially, to prevent the government from intervening. I think when it first was established, it was like very loosely followed by the film industry or Hollywood specifically. But then the Production Code Administration gets established, and that is also headed by a Catholic dude. Mm-hmm. And so that's when they actually start enforcing the rules. Like it basically becomes a requirement that all movies produced in Hollywood be given like a stamp of approval by the PCA or the Production Code Administration before a film is released. And the reason why it's also called Hays Code is because William H. Hays, a Presbyterian elder, was the president of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America at the time. And so the Hays Code is roughly enforced between 1934 and 1968. But you'll see like towards the end of the 50s, I think the industry basically starts disregarding it. And then even before this time, filmmakers are finding covert and subversive ways to get around the rules of the Hays Code, which brings us to lesbian ghosts in movies. And so, as we mentioned, the movies we'll talk about here are Rebecca, which was directed by Hitchcock, and then The Uninvited, directed by Lewis Allen. So chapter one in our four chapter ghosts series that's happening all today is the symbolic ghost. We're just calling them, this is just us, we're calling, yeah, we've created these labels, so don't sue us, ghosts. So, yeah, the symbolic
ghost. That's what ghosts would do to us, is they would sue us.
Suing us, ghosts. Another ghost lawsuit. So these are kind of like the invisible threats of the lesbian, right? Mm-hmm. Thematically. We will share this link in our show notes, but our dear friend Heather Petrotelli has this amazing lecture that she's posted to YouTube called From Subtext to Text, Queered, Gothic, and Horror Films Throughout Time. And there is a section all about lesbian ghosts. Thank you, Heather.
That we borrowed heavily from.
Very heavily. It really helped shape this episode, I think. But ignore that if this episode is terrible.
Yeah, that's great.
So just to quote Heather, she says, and this is about Rebecca and The Uninvited, the films share narrative similarities, namely queer disembodied ghosts and two iconic gothic butches. Like Mrs. Danvers in Rebecca, Miss Holloway in The Uninvited is obsessed with the memory of her dead subtextual lesbian lover.
So Rebecca, it's based on a book by Daphne du Maurier.
Who is a noted bisexual.
Noted bisexual. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it got turned into this film in 1940, directed by Hitchcock, as previously stated. But there have been several remakes, including Netflix put one out last year, so 2020. And the 1940s version is the most lesbian. In the book, actually, Mrs. Danvers comes to Manderley, which is like the Gothic house that all of this takes place in, on the coast of Cornwall. She came to the house when Rebecca, the titular character that we never actually see, when she was a child, So she's actually more of like a matron to Rebecca. But in the movie, she comes on board when Rebecca comes to the house for the first time as a bride. And so they're much closer in age. And the premise of the story is that we...
Spoiler.
We start... What? Oh, yeah. Hey, we're spoiling this. Thank you. Oh, my God. So a rich widower... He's recently lost his wife, so he's been recently widowed. He is taking a vacation in Monte Carlo. He meets this young woman, and trigger content warning, whatever, for if you watch the Hitchcock version, it is so gross. Like, his relationship with the young woman. Well, first off, she's like just this wisp of a woman who wants to not have to, like, she wants to be told what to do all the time, and it's so frustrating. But he, like, at one point she's like, I wish I was like 36 and wearing a black satin gown and pearls. And he said, please don't ever wear a black satin gown and pearls or ever be 36. And it's like, and it's like, that's not even like the worst of the things he says to her. But anyway, so they have, I think, like a 4-day romance. They decide to get married. He brings her back to his mansion. And in his mansion is where you see, well, you don't actually see, you feel everywhere the specter of his dead wife. Everyone loved her. Mrs. Danvers is the head of the household, and it's heavily implied that she loved her. There's one iconic scene that I think we can link to. It's on YouTube, where she's taking the new Mrs. De Winter. So De Winter is the guy's last name. Oh, and interestingly, she's another character who actually doesn't have a name except for she becomes the second Mrs. De Winters. And that's the only way that she's referred to. Yeah. She even has this line in the movie where she answers the phone and she's just freaked out by everything because she's not used to living in this kind of luxury. But she answers the phone and someone asks for Mrs. De Winters and she says, oh, no, Mrs. De Winters has been dead for a year. So it's like she doesn't even, you know, see herself as this person. So she's kind of like a ghost of herself. But there's this scene where Mrs. Danvers discovers the new Mrs. De Winters in the old Mrs. De Winters bedroom. And she walks her through the room. She belittles her first, and then she walks her through the room. She's like, oh, this is where I keep all her clothes. And the way she does this is amazing. Like, she's such a creepy, dramatic actress. She, like, she opens the closet, and she, like, turns over her shoulder, and she's like, you want to see it, don't you? And it's, like, it's so strange.
I would argue that Mrs. Danvers is the star of the film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's fantastic. I would actually skip a lot of the parts where it's not her and just enjoy Mrs. Danvers.
I think it's also worth noting that Rebecca's been dead for about a year at this point, I think. Mm-hmm. But her room is still totally pristine.
Yeah.
And nothing's been, like, touched or changed since she died. In a sense, that's, like, a way that she's haunting this film, right? Is,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
because Mrs. Danvers has, like, kind of intentionally preserved everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, even her letters are still on the desk. Like, all of her stuff is still as she left it. So she is, yeah, very much everywhere in the house, in a way. But she's like, oh, and this is where I keep her underwear. And she, like, has these slide out, actually, like, rotate out drawers. And it's very, and she was like, the nuns made this for her. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. The underwear was made by nuns. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then she brings the new Mrs. De Winters eventually to the bed, where underneath the pillowcase that Mrs. Danvers embroidered for Rebecca, underneath it is this, like, luxurious black lingerie, like it's a nightie, and she slides her hand into it and she says, have you ever seen anything so delicate? Look, you can see my hand through the fabric. And at this point, the new Mrs. De Winters is like, I don't know what's happening. Like, are we in a threesome right now? And she's like very uncomfortable, and she runs for the door.
Is that the scene where she also asks, do you think the dead come back and watch the living?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We should play a clip of this somewhere in the scene, because the whole thing is, like, incredibly... Ugh. The subtext is, like, very thinly veiled, I'd say, at this point.
It's as thin as a nightie, yeah.
Ooh.
I keep her underwear on this side. They were made specially for her by the nuns in the convent of St. Clair. I always used to wait up for her, no matter how late. Sometimes she and Mr. De Winter didn't come home until dawn. While she was undressing, she'd tell me about the party she'd been to. She knew everyone that mattered. Everyone loved her.
Yeah. So that was actually one of the code enforcers wrote to the producer of the film. They said, oh, how did they say it? They basically said that, you know, we can't have one kind of a spoiler. It is a spoiler, but I don't care about it. The murderer gets away scot-free. So you find that.
Oh, right. This is a huge spoiler. But right. Yeah.
Mr. De Winter has actually killed Rebecca.
Surprise. He claims accidentally, too.
He claims accidentally. Right, right. But he gets away with it. And according to the code, this is one of the things that the code said, basically, like, criminal acts have to be punished, you know, mm-hmm. by the end of the film. So he gets away scot-free, and they didn't like the sexual perversion that was hinted at. So Rebecca also hints that she's got an illegitimate child, and then also the homosexual implications of this scene. But somehow they were able to keep it in the movie, and I'm not really sure how.
Well, it's because they killed the so-called lesbian
that's true.
Villain,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
By the end. So like this is also obviously a huge spoiler, so I hope everyone listening has seen this film, because it's actually, I think, worth a watch.
Yeah.
Especially if you're kind of viewing it through the lens of more of like the sapphic lens, you know, and more sympathetic towards Mrs. Denvers.
But, yeah, yeah.
So the movie actually ends with her burning down the estate mm-hmm. and then taking herself with it because she's a gay monster, of course.
Right, right. So the gay monster dies. You're right.
And that's probably why it's all okay, because the moral of the story is like, you don't get punished for your crimes if you're killing another queer monster.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Rebecca came out in 1940, and then Uninvited came out in 1944. And I think this is interesting because it actually deals with a literal lesbian ghost. So really quick synopsis on The Uninvited. It's basically about this dude, this composer, who finds an abandoned house on the English coast, and then he wants to buy it, but it turns out it's haunted, and then he like falls in love with the daughter of the deceased.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Oh, it's like him and his sister, right?
Yeah, him and his sister. That's right.
So there are
yeah.
like two heterosexual couples that are
two heterosexual
couples.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, total side note. Maybe I should say this later. I'll say it later. Okay.
Are you gonna remember? Can you put it somewhere?
Yes.
Okay.
I put it somewhere. I put it in my head. So in The Uninvited, Mary is kind of the Rebecca character in this film. She died 17 years prior. She actually manifests as a ghost, a literal lesbian ghost in this movie, and haunts the house. Oh, and side note, actually, this is a huge spoiler, but she was pushed to her death from a cliff.
Cliffs and the sea. Also another lesbian motif.
Okay, well, that was I was going to note that theme.
Oh,
was that
I see. Yeah.
Both Rebecca and The Uninvited take place on an estate by the seaside, and as we know, that is a theme in lesbian films. And I think pretty much everything we're talking about today, with maybe the exception of exception of the second to last filmish thing, takes place by the sea.
And there's still a body of water in that one.
That's true. Waters, lesbians, it's all related. But there's a character in this movie named Miss Holloway, and she is Mary's friend, and I think she runs like a mental institution for the criminally lesbian. That's not true.
It's sort of true.
It's pretty clear they're more than friends. It's maybe not as overt as in Rebecca, but the lesbian subtext is still unmistakable in this film, and I think it's safe to say that Miss Holloway is still in love with Mary.
Mary was a goddess. Her skin was radiant in that bright, bright hair. How this room brings her back to me. The nights we sat talking in front of that fireplace, planning our whole lives. It wasn't flirtations and dresses we talked about. We were no silly, giggling girls. We intended to conquer life.
She actually is the owner of a mental institution for troubled young women, not for criminally lesbian. Oh, the institution that she runs is called Mary Meredith Retreat. So she actually names it after her buddy.
Yeah, her pal.
Her gal pal. This film is definitely worth watching too, but they clearly like try to connect the fact that, you know, she's this like queered other, and the reason why she doesn't deserve to live is because she never fulfilled her role as a mother by giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
The girl who's you think is her daughter, this is a huge spoiler, is actually like the daughter of her husband and his mistress. So these two films share really similar themes and storylines. A big difference, obviously, is that the villain in Rebecca is Danvers, the living housekeeper, whereas in The Uninvited, it's Mary, the ghost. But in both cases, lesbian equals bad, 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 and punishment.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so between Rebecca and the Uninvited, and The End of the Haze Code. We have a bunch more movies. We consulted with our Oracle, Heather. So, for example, we've got Cat People, which came out in 1942, and its sequel, The Curse of the Cat People. And these are movies with ghosts in them, but there are a bunch more queer-coded movies in between. And then we also have The Haunting, which came out in 1963. So we have these three.
It's like a bunch.
Yeah, a bunch,
I guess,
yeah.
So. Yeah.
So now we'll get into some post-Haze Code stuff, but we will put the entire list of Heather's entire list of lesbian ghost movies in the show notes.
One quick thing before we get into the post-Haze. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned this in a previous episode, I think in like a Media Rex thing, but if you are interested in learning more about the impact that the Haze Code had on LGBTQ+ films, characters, and stories, highly, highly recommend watching or reading The Celluloid Closet. That gets you like an in-depth insight into that. But then The Haze Code, it starts to kind of like end in the 50s and 60s, or the enforcement becomes more loose. I think partly because of competition from television and then like influence from, you know, foreign films. But then you start seeing movies like Some Like It Hot and like Psycho and Blow Up. So we have these people who are like pushing the boundaries in terms of what is acceptable mm-hmm. in this time. And then like, you know, these themes that they're not supposed to. I don't think I actually talked about what the Haze Code actually is, but there's this long list of things that you're supposed to follow that.
It's like a moral code for movies.
It's a moral code, yeah. Like you can't have like profanity, nudity or suggestive nudity.
Anti-patriotism. Like, or anti-nationalism, yeah.
Graphic or realistic violence, sexual perversions, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's interesting that like you can, but it can't go unpunished for some of these things.
Yeah.
It really is like a moral code. It's like a literal moral code.
It's established by the Catholic Church. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you have a robbery, that robber needs to be caught by the end.
Right.
That sort of thing.
You'll see in this time that even like married couples are sleeping in like separate beds. Mm-hmm. Which I always thought was interesting when I was like younger and watched these movies. I was like, oh, is this just how people live back then? You know?
Which is actually a very practical thing if you sleep with someone who like rolls around a lot. So no shade to anyone who has like twin beds
to have
or something.
A barrier between us. Like, just put up like a little screen.
Bubbles for each of us. Yeah.
Bubbles. Sleep bubbles. Cute. So towards the end of the 60s, the Haze Code is like officially replaced by the MPAA rating system, or now it's like the MPA, but that is a version of like what we know today in America anyway. So you're all probably familiar with rated G, PG, etc. And that brings us to explicit lesbian ghosts.
Yay!
Woo!
Post-Haze Code, we can have explicit Yay! Lesbian ghosts.
So as Laurel mentioned, Heather Petrocelli provided this lovely list of lesbian ghosts in films, or ghosts of lesbianism in films. And we're going to skip down a little bit to the end to talk about this little movie that maybe some of you heard of called Portrait of Lady on Fire.
It's French, so maybe not, but yeah.
What was it rated? Was it not rated? NR?
Yeah.
Probably R. Maybe PG-13? I don't know. Whatever. It's rated G for gay.
Oh.
Let's talk about Portrait, because I heard there's a ghost in it.
Yep. Okay. So our next ghost type is the metaphorical ghost. And when we metaphors. So in Portrait, we're going through Marianne's memory, of course. And during the episodes in her memory, in between some of them, we have Eloise showing up as a ghost in her wedding dress. If you think about ghosts as the presence of an absence, or like the embodiment of the death of something, right? Eloise at these points embodies the eventual death of their relationship, and it shows up occasionally. It shows up twice as a ghost, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shows up twice as a ghost in Marianne's memory. But Portrait is also haunted in a lot of ways by other ghostly presences.
Thinking about this now, and I feel like it's crazy that we're still talking about Portrait and still like kind of discovering new things.
Is it?
It's not crazy. It's great. It's spooky. So if you read a lot of reviews of this film, it's often described as like this haunting film. And I was kind of thinking about that and how it's like, in a way, we're being haunted. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're still talking about it feels like, yeah. I just got the chills. Feels like a haunting. I mean, I think haunting has like a negative connotation sometimes, but I'm very positively haunted by Portrait. Literally, no one can see this, but Eloise is behind me haunting both of us right now.
I can see it and it's creeping me out.
Okay, so we have this ghost that we just talked about with Marianne being haunted by Eloise. But then I think Eloise is haunted by Marianne to a certain extent too, because, you know, you see her towards the end, I mean, literally at the end, and she's still feeling the presence of Marianne when she's at the symphony. Both of them are haunted by the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And we get like a real sense of that when we finally see a man towards the end of the film for the first time. And it is a literal jump scare for us, right? Yeah. Because it's like we're seeing a ghost in a way. We're haunted by the sister who died because, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not us. I'm like, Eloise is haunted by the sister. Well, the house is really haunted by the sister, I think.
Yeah,
she's having
to
take her place and take that responsibility.
The story is haunted by the sister. I mean, the whole thing takes place because she died. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the father, too, similarly, like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're in the position that they are now because the father also mm-hmm. died, we're assuming. So we're kind of haunted by him. And then in a sense, I think Marianne is also, she continues to get haunted by Eloise after this memory that she's sharing, right? Because she's seeing her, that painting is a ghost in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Like, speaking of paintings, the Countess's painting as
is
sort of like,
yeah.
It's like we're being haunted by that marriage. And it's that painting feels a lot like the painting in The Uninvited, I think. Like the way that it just sort of like sits above everyone and like stares at you. Ugh.
Yeah, and there's like this really important conversation that's happening, you know, right below
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I feel like there's at least 7 or 8 hauntings in the portrait.
Yeah.
In portrait. And the house is a haunted house, you know?
Yeah.
It's very sparse and spooky, and I never really thought of it as a ghost story consciously, I think, you know? But it is, in a sense. I mean, we know that there's many gothic themes kind of strewn throughout the film, but thinking about it as a ghost story is just another way to look at this film.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think about it as a ghost story until we talked to Heather about it.
Mm-hmm,
thank you,
mm-hmm.
Heather. This is basically Heather is haunting this episode.
Oh my god! Lovely.
All right, next ghost.
Okay, so chapter three. The literal ghost. So this was really just such a delight to.
Oh my god! Wow,
that sounded really sarcastic. I didn't mean it sarcastically. I thought it was really.
It was a delight. It really was.
So the movie or the well, it's not a movie. Oh shoot, we're not talking about a movie, but there's something very cinematic about this, which is The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Spoilers! Bly Manor follows the story of this woman, Dani, who has moved to England for mysterious reasons, and we come to find that it's because she had been engaged to be married, and her fiancé was killed in a car accident, basically. And so she gets a job in England as the nanny to these two children, these two haunted looking children who live in, of course, a mansion, like a very large mm-hmm. estate.
By a body of water.
By a large body of water.
Waters are sapphic. Waters are sapphic.
Yeah, I think
water
it is. Sapphic. Yeah. Water is sapphic.
We've established on the show today that water is sapphic.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So as the story progresses, we find out that her fiance was killed because they had gotten into a fight because she had realized that she was, and please correct me if I'm getting this wrong, because I think a lot of this was silently portrayed, like that you couldn't hear their conversation really.
Yeah.
So you were just supposed to imply everything. So this is what I implied from those scenes, but she had started realizing that she was gay and she called off their wedding and he was furious at her. And they got into an argument in their car, and he was very mad. He stepped out of the car, and right after he stepped out of the car, he gets hit by, like, a truck or something. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more explicit that they're these, like, childhood sweethearts, and they've been together mm-hmm. for a really long time. And there was something kind of pulling her away. Like, she was just no longer wanted to be in this relationship.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
like, this expectation that was keeping her
right.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
There were definitely hints of her realizing, oh, hey, maybe I'm also attracted to, you know, mm-hmm. women. And so I'm sure that kind of played a part too.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. Like, she was also just not in love with him. So it's not because she was gay, but her being gay and her fiance dying become like instantly connected in mm-hmm. her mind
of
and
course.
Her subconscious.
Of course.
Of course. Right. Yeah, of course. And so after that incident, you see her haunted by his ghost. So you'll see him standing behind her with like the headlights from the truck reflected in his glasses, so you can't see his eyes, and it's a really great effect.
It's one of the most impactful manifestations of a haunting I've ever seen. Oh, just thinking about, I like screamed when he first appeared.
Yeah.
I'm getting goosebumps for sure. Yeah. The reason why we see that is because the last thing we see of him alive is like when he's exiting his car, he's kind of facing oncoming traffic, and he has these like really cute circular glasses, like these big round glasses. Yeah. It's the 80s.
They're like Harry Potter glasses, whatever.
But cuter and like bigger. And like, so the headlights of the oncoming car are reflected from his glasses in this really like iridescent way. And so like that is literally the last image that Danny sees of her fiance or whatever. Mm-hmm. But before she goes to England, his mom gives her the glasses and it's like, oh, cursed. Yeah. You know? And there's like a symbolic moment later in the show where she finally like kind of tosses those
good,
aside.
Good. But
yes, there's this ongoing association with his ghost, or, you know, being haunted by essentially like her gayness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a literal ghost, but there's also metaphorical ghosts here too.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so he follows her throughout her life, almost through the rest of her life. But she falls in love. She falls in love with the gardener, who is a woman. And it's a very, very sweet relationship. It's super cute. It's ridiculously cute.
Yeah.
Jamie is the name of the woman. Mm-hmm. And they have a very nice life together. Wait, how does she get cursed? I forgot.
Oh, my God.
Does she take the child out of the lake and that's what curses her?
Oh, my God. Okay, so there's a lady in the lake. Okay, there's like five storylines happening at once. And like,
another literal ghost. But yeah,
the house
is
haunted by, I think her name is like Viola or something like that. Yeah, Viola. The story that happens centuries before, like maybe in the 1800s, I can't remember, that sort of establishes like how this ghost comes about. And this ghost is like haunting this house and she can't leave the house and she has no face. So it's freaking creepy. but she like comes out of the lake at night and she has this like one-track mind because she lost her child. And so fast forward to this moment you're talking about, I think Viola sees Flora and she takes Flora and she's about to take Flora into the lake because she thinks Flora is her child.
Mm-hmm. She can't see. She has no eyes.
She has no face. And then Danny, to save Flora, lets Viola take possession of her, sort of. There's this thing that she says. What was it again?
Oh, I forgot.
It's you, it's me, it's us, I think.
Oh my God,
I just got the fucking chills.
Me too.
It's you, it's me, it's us. Yeah, so, I mean, gosh, you just watch the show
if you haven't
seen it already to get the background behind that. But she's somehow able to coexist with Viola, but she knows that at some point Viola will, like, take her back.
So now Viola isn't haunting the house, it's haunting her.
Yes.
So, like, sometimes when she'll look in, like, she's filled the kitchen sink with water or something, she'll look in the water and, like, there's Viola.
Yeah.
So she knows something's going to happen. Like, this is following her for years.
My God. She and Jamie are like in love, and like I think they move away from the house, but you
they
know
start
they're
like a
sort
flower
of like,
shop together or something.
It's like imagine you and me, and but you know in the you know there's like a sort of expiration date to the relationship because like she's haunted by a faceless woman.
So so we don't have to give away the end, but
Or do we?
Should we say that?
I think we should say it. This is a huge spoiler. Huge, huge, huge spoiler. Huge, huge, huge. Please don't listen to this if you haven't seen the show because it's worth waiting for.
Yeah. So eventually, Viola does catch up with Danny and Danny becomes a ghost. So there are three ghosts, at least. Three major ghosts.
There's also like, what's that dude, Henry?
Oh, gross.
Rachel? There's
that
a whole,
fucking
I'm telling
guy.
You, there's like.
It's a very haunted story.
There's like 10 overlapping stories. There's like a haunting within a haunting within a haunting.
This is a story that is full of literal ghosts. Yeah. Like just chock full of literal ghosts.
But Danny and Jamie's storyline is the most important.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
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 Oh.
Now I kind of want to rewatch it on silent in the daytime.
Like minimized
and very
like an
small
inch
on my laptop.
Did you ever rewatch it with like a big
of course
TV?
Not. No, I probably can now though. Now
do
that
you think
I've, like,
Ellie would watch it with you?
No,
really, it's like too
not.
Spooky. It's pretty spooky.
It's very spooky. I'm still getting chills, and I haven't seen it for like a year or whatever.
Yeah. Really quick before we move on, we have one more thing to talk about. But I do think it's like important to call out all the stuff that Danny is carrying as this sapphic character,
She's
carrying the guilt of, you know, causing her boyfriend's
or thinking
death.
She thinking, caused
oh yeah yeah thinking yeah. it you know and then she ultimately sacrifices herself she's
oh,
like yeah possess Danny. Me so I can save this young girl's life and she's like living with this ghost inside of her, which is, you know, could be interpreted as being like symbolic of like, what is that? I don't know, the patriarchy, who knows? And then like, she actually takes her own life. She kills herself. She goes back to the house and basically drowns herself in this freaking lake.
Oh,
water,
I thought,
of sapphic.
Well, did she, I thought the ghost did that to her. Like the ghost took her back to
oh,
the
maybe.
Lake.
Okay. Okay. Well, whatever. Either way, she's but, in yeah. the lake. And then freaking Jamie goes to find her. And this whole scene where she dives into the lake and she finds Danny in the bottom of the lake. I'm getting chills again and I want to cry. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great show. But I feel like, of course, you know, this character can't just...
yeah.
These two lesbians cannot have like a happy ending. I kind of want to rewatch Bly now. Maybe I will.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Audrey, hold on.
What?
I thought Allie was already here and she was just kind of making quiet noises, but she just texted me and she said she's on her way home.
Oh.
It's like, what's happening? No, I don't want to open the door.
Oh my God, you hear something?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Our neighbors are gone. I'm the only one in this building. Shit.
You're like, oh, Ellie's making such cute noises, like scratching at the door.
Oh my God.
You're like, oh, Ellie, stop scratching. You see, oh my God, is there like, you see like shadow walking around? Like, oh my God.
I just put a yoga mat at the base of the door so like nothing can like grab my feet.
You're the one talking about getting haunted in the daytime.
I know. So that's
now
what
it's
mean.
Happening.
I'm so good at haunting myself.
You're so good at haunting yourself. You should put that in your LinkedIn profile.
I just have to survive until she gets home.
You
that's,
can do
that's
it.
That's it.
You can do it. Oh, I believe God. In you.
I'm not leaving this closet. You're staying on the phone until she gets
it's
here.
Okay. We might still be recording.
Great.
Okay.
Should we go to the next one?
So we don't get a happy ending there. We don't get a real... Laurel's shaking back and forth. It's cool. Everything's good. She's just rocking and whimpering to herself. I'll just take over here from here. So
it's fine.
I think everything we've talked about so far has not really like had a true happy ending, but let us end on a happy note, shall we?
Yeah, that brings us to our fourth type of ghost, which is the digital ghost.
Wait. How do I sound pixelated and spooky?
And like a modem. Yeah.
Oh.
A haunted modem.
I cannot do that. That is definitely a haunted.
Did your modem have like springs in it? Like, boing, boing, boing.
There was also a horse living in my modem.
Okay, so our digital ghost comes courtesy of San Junipero. I don't know if you saw this coming. You probably did if you've listened to us enough. But yeah, so, oh my God, what the fuck was that?
Holy shit, we are being haunted live as
live?
We record. You know, you. Well, we're live right now. Hey, stop shifting your microphone. I'm gonna. Do you need me to come over there? How far is Allie?
I don't know.
Oh my God, I'm gonna text
it's
her.
Fine. What happened?
Wow.
What was that?
What is going on?
I don't know.
I can't
there was
believe
like
it.
A weird little like scritching sound by the door.
Are you house sitting a puppy?
No, not anymore. The puppy's gone.
Gone in what sense?
Ah!
Oh my God.
Are you home? Where are you?
Oh my God.
Ah! Okay, it's fine. Let's talk about San Junipero.
For anyone who doesn't know, San Junipero is an episode of the series Black Mirror.
Season 3, episode 4,
or something like that.
Yeah.
We actually did a watch along, our first season, if you have not seen it and would like to watch it with us. But like many Black Mirror episodes, you know, the setup is kind of like, you think something is happening. These people are living in this, I don't know, how would you describe it? Utopic?
Yeah.
There's this character named Yorkie played by Mackenzie Davis, who's kind of like showing up at this bar through the decades and you don't really know what's going on. But she meets Gugu Bathara's character, Kelly, at this bar and they form a connection. And then you find out, big spoiler, that this is all sort of happening as a virtual VR type situation. It takes place in the future, both these characters, Yorkie and Kelly, are actually much, much older, and Yorkie is like kind of on her deathbed. And so San Junipero is where you can go after you die. Like, your consciousness gets uploaded to this database where it looks sort of like a data farm, like literally, but then when you go into San Junipero, it's this like sort of paradise, right? It's another seaside town.
Right, yeah.
Most of the show takes place towards the end of Yorkie's life. By the end of the show, Yorkie has passed on. There's like a big story arc, right? Like where Kelly, she was kind of like visiting San Junipero, but she'd been married previously and she had planned on not actually staying in San Junipero.
She just kind of wanted to have like a lot of fun before she finally passed away.
Exactly.
Permanently.
But by the end of the show, they end up together in this paradise. And I mean, there's probably like a darker interpretation of this, but right, this yeah. is the interpretation yeah. that I like and we deserve after this long history of horrible treatment of sapphic characters and their ghosts in film. Yeah, it's like this beautiful, happy 80s moment. Heaven is a Place on Earth by Belinda Carlisle is playing. It's a literal, like, kind of right off into the sunset moment of these two sapphic characters. And it's the kind of haunting that I want to see more of.
Yeah.
80s, sapphic, happy.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Davis. Gugu Bothara. I think the M is silent.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Put those in a blender and haunt me all day.
Perfect.
This is what happens when I don't have notes. I'm like, blender, haunting, lesbian smoothie. Oh.
Lesbian ghost smoothie.
Mmm. Mm.
And those are our ghosts.
And those are our ghosts. Are you still getting haunted, Laurel?
I don't know. Don't.
Oh, sorry. Don't summon the ghost.
Please don't conjure it. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this spooky journey. And now it's time to be spooked by our media rex.
To be wrecked by our media rex?
Oh, no.
No. Mm-mm. No, that's different. Okay, so my recommendation this week is a book that I had actually avoided when it came out.
For good reason.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like, so it's...
I mean, it's a great book.
It's probably one of my favorite books of all time now that I've actually read it. But it's In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. And I avoided it because the one-liner for it was that it's a book about queer domestic abuse. And it's, when am I in the mood to read that? You know, like... When in my leisure time do I want to explore this? But it's beautifully written, and it's not just beautifully written, like structurally, it's, I don't want to say anything that would spoil it, but she bends the genre in so many different directions that it's like, it's exciting. You feel like you're in her shoes. I say in her shoes and it's such a cliche, like it's, you feel like you're embodying her, what she experienced, and she does it in a way that even I, as someone who can't take a lot of like empathetic pain, was able to, like, I think I read the book, the whole thing, in like two sittings because it was so engrossing. But yeah, like, highly recommended. And I feel like it's really appropriate for this episode because the way that she explained how she felt in her abuse, it's called In the Dream House, and so the book takes the structure of the house in a way. And she says in the book that she felt like she was a ghost haunting her own house, or the house that where all this takes place. So she writes in second person, which is why it sounds like a little weird, but it's very effective. So she says, "And then it occurs to you one day, standing in the living room, that you are this house's ghost. You are the one wandering from room to room with no purpose, gaping at the moving boxes that are never unpacked, never certain what you're supposed to do. After all, you don't need to die to leave a mark of psychic pain. If anyone is living in the dream house now, he or she might be seeing the echo of you." So yeah, it's also a ghost story, even though she's still currently alive. But the way that it made her feel disembodied is super powerful. So highly recommended. Oh my God.
Yeah. I read this a while ago and I can't think of anything else I'd read that was like it.
Yeah.
Her voice is very unique and I had a very similar experience. It felt like this like weird sort of immersive experience
yeah.
in the form of a book where I felt like I was living it too. I was like, I am also in this dream house.
Yeah.
And I am haunted by Carmen Maria Machado and her ex.
Yeah.
I think everything she writes is incredible. She's spooky as fuck in the best way possible. I don't think it was this book, but maybe the short story one
yeah.
that I was reading like before bed.
Her Body and Other Parties.
Yeah. And that like was so fucked up. I mean, just not something that you should be reading right before you go to bed. But related to that is my media recommendation, which is also a book this week. So double book, join our book club. And I'm reading this book called, it's a YA novel called Wilder Girls by Rory Power. It's not something that Carmen Maria Machado would write, but I feel like it feels kind of inspired by her in the sense that there's a lot of body horror in this book. So, you know, lots of really detailed descriptions of like an eye that's sewn up and you can kind of like feel something moving underneath it, you know, like just gross stuff like that, but like really fun to read before bed. It takes place in a girls' boarding school in this like remote island. Of course, it's like an island. They're surrounded by a body of water. And it is sapphic, and there's sort of sapphic themes throughout, but there's, you know, some sapphic characters because it's a girls' boarding school, of course. I'm not finished with the book yet, so maybe I shouldn't fully recommend it in case something goes horribly wrong, like all the lesbians die, which could happen. But it gets sapphic. Not early, but earlier than most. You know, I feel like for most movies and books, you don't start to see like the two lesbian characters touch each other until like, you know, 90% of the way through. And so that was refreshing that it wasn't, you know, they didn't wait that long. It's a very like now book because there's essentially like this outbreak. So the girls in this boarding school on this island have basically been quarantined there. Like they are not leaving the island. Like just like really weird physical things are happening to them. This is probably too much of a spoiler, but I'll stop. But I'll just say that there's more to it than, you know, what's on the surface. And so I can recommend it for the most part.
So far, yeah. Awesome.
It's not ghostly, but it's haunting. And so everything is very on theme.
Yay.
And that's the show. And Laurel has survived it so far.
So far. Allie said she'll be here in 8 minutes.
I mean, a lot can happen in 8 minutes.
Shut the fuck up. Oh my God. Oh my God.
And now it's time to introduce this week's GASMR. For this episode's GASMR, we will be hearing a collaboration between Winnie and a song from the score of another haunting sapphic film, The World to Come. Winnie is the name Laurel has given to a creaky, probably haunted door in her house that sounds like a horse. That's right. A horse door.
That's right. That's right. Mm. Yep. But before we get to Winnie, do you have any sapphic questions for the next show? Let us know. You can email us at sapphiccultureclub@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at sapphiccultureclub and Twitter at sapphicpodcast. Also, if you have your own horse doors that you actually know, huh? Don't.
What'd you say? Horse doors?
Yeah.
Oh, horse doors.
What did you think I said?
Whore stores. Whore stores. I was like, excuse me? Also, if you have your own whore stores. Whore stores. Horse stores. Whore stores.
It sounds like one of those things. It's like one of those tricks. It's like, here, read this card, and you've written horse door on it, and they.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Read this quickly.
Like the Simpsons.
Whore
like,
store. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, if you have your own horse doors. I can't talk anymore.
Horse doors. Please send us audio of them and maybe we'll feature them in a future GASMR.
Thanks for joining us. Check out the list provided by Heather Petrocelli of Lesbian Ghosts and Ghosts of Lesbianism in Film. Next week, if all goes as planned, we are going to be seeing Petite Maman in theaters.
Yay!
As part of our Halloween Ooh. Series. Yeah. It's going to haunt
Little
us.
Little Mother.
Actually, I'm not going to say anything because I did see it already, and I feel like it's sort of, yeah, cover your ears. It's not on theme. Put it back in. Put it back in. Put it in. Put okay. it in. I'm like, you're going to hear this later when you're listening to it.
Oh, you're right.
All I said was, it's not on theme.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's what I took my ear. Yeah. My earphones out for. Okay.
All right. Please enjoy the sounds of Winnie.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Thank you.